e-commerce is based in 2020, not just on selling a product for the right price that looks good and does what we say it's going to do. I actually think that e-commerce's job in 2020 is to also create content. When you're an e-commerce,
Interesting.
when you're an e-commerce provider, particularly in sectors like retail, you have a responsibility to creating an experience for your customers as much as you do to sell them a product. And the best stories are the true ones.
Welcome to the Winning E-Commerce Experience Show, where it's all about creating a brand that your customers love so they keep coming back. This show is brought to you by DataQ. Your store experience begins with your homepage. DataQ improves your conversion rate up to 30% by showing each visitor a personalized homepage based on their interest. And now, your host, Shahram Anver.
Hey guys, today we have a very special guest. He's the founder and CEO of DayL and First Mile. Ian Rosenberg, great to have you with us.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
So you've got such a great background. Like, I can see a rhinoceros right behind you. And just before we started, you had this like really nice tree. We're just talking about like, it's so refreshing, I guess, to have something nice to, I mean, green is really relaxing, right? To look at.
It, well, these days, anything is relaxing that isn't a computer screen with a COVID chart on it.
I know. It's like, but things is, seems to be, things are opening up a little bit. Like, I'm in Europe right now, and I mean, I guess people are starting to go outside, and things aren't as crazy as a month ago. Is that the same over there?
It depends on where you are in the country. I think in some areas it feels like things are starting to get back to normal, but I think there's this big collective breath holding that's happening and waiting to see what happens as we're kind of going into the world. So I think the next 3 weeks are going to be very telling for America. You know, we seem to be under the impression that we've beat this thing, and when in reality, I think we've handled it pretty poorly as compared to everybody else.
I think, you know, there's every single country, it's just like really full of people really freaking out. But I don't think there's anyone even like more so freaked out than, you know, let's not say that I think everyone's freaked out, but like, I think I really just want to focus on business owners, right? Especially like small, medium. I mean, scary times as well for them. But I think what I've seen really quite a bit is that the online world is sort of like your last hope, so to speak. It's like, it's a one beacon where, yes, it's not easy, but there's a lot of stuff that you can do to hopefully still have your sales coming. I heard this really emotional audio from someone on Shopify. They had a conference call, and they played this little audio tape, this audio recording of a customer service call they got from a farmer from somewhere rural in the US. And she was just saying, hey, thanks for being around and helping me create my Shopify site. And then she just started crying, saying, you know, like, you know, I wouldn't know what I'd do if I couldn't sell online. Like, thank God I could get my stuff online. So, so that was like, that was pretty heavy, but, I mean, you're probably feeling like happy with the decision of founding an e-commerce site, right? Like you, I mean, how's that going so far?
Yeah, happy is that's a fine word for it. I would say, you know, even for e-com, it's been difficult, but we're grateful that we don't have bricks and mortar right now. I feel very, very strongly that it's never been easier because of platforms like Shopify to start an e-commerce website. I think that it follows kind of the frontier that we saw with YouTube 10 years ago, when it became very easy to become a content creator. I think that is now flattened as well into business. And I think that's been fascinating. You know, what's really interesting to me though is, you know, we've slowly been making the transition in globally to e-commerce. But e-commerce was at a really interesting, especially in retail, inflection point right before coronavirus. E-commerce businesses were, or some of them were struggling, and I think people were starting to dive into why, and then COVID hit. So I think there's this immense reshuffling that's happening right now that I actually think is going to be very positive in the long haul.
Yeah, I mean, especially for e-commerce, because I think it's like, That was this really funny infographic I saw recently. I think it was on LinkedIn, where the question was, what spurred your digital transformation? Number one, CEO. Number two, CTO. Number three, COVID. I mean, like, you just had to get online now, right? But listen, I think people are also kind of tired of hearing this about the virus and stuff like that. So I want to make sure that we don't get too much into it.
Yeah.
What I'd really like to get into more is that, tell us about Dayal. Tell us about you, why you started Dayal. I think, you know, obviously that's a really cool story behind it.
Yeah, sure. So Dayal is the business I wish I had started 6 years ago. But we came to it honestly. I had started a company that's still the parent company of Dayal called Thread. And Thread, for me, started after the earthquake in Haiti way back in 2010. So I had gone down there. I was in television production and marketing, and my initial impetus for going to Haiti after the earthquake was to take pictures of what was going on and then share them with people. And what I saw was kind of really mind-blowing for me and changed my life and put me on the track that now is where we are with the business. Because I had no experience really with nonprofits, and I had seen a system of nonprofits in Haiti that are maybe more dense than just about anywhere else on the planet, and they were largely ineffective at doing the thing that people actually needed in order to bring their society and their culture forward, which is, you know, helping to create good, dignified jobs. So I came to business through a lens of society, and really said, like, how do I put my friends back to work? Because I'd been there now for working there on and off for over, you know, 2 years, and all my friends kept asking me, you know, we love the aid, we love the handouts, we love the immunizations, we love the water, but like, honestly, we don't need it. We'd rather just go to work every day. And so I started trying to figure out, how could I put my friends back to work?
Right.
And I looked around and I saw a lot of trash on the ground, and, you know, and this incredibly talented and underutilized workforce. And we decided to start helping them to collect and process plastic waste and eventually turned it into fabric. So we started selling that fabric to big brands. And eventually I started realizing that the big brands weren't as good at sharing the story of recycled and sustainable materials as we thought they should be. And it's very, very much a story of, like, if you can't join them, beat them. So then the brand became.
Yeah, I mean, I love how, I mean, I don't know if you guys hired someone to do your copy or whether you did it yourself, but I love the fact that you said that, you know, you turn plastic bottles into a shockingly sturdy wax canvas that will make you question almost everything. I mean, that is a bold statement, my friend, but that was awesome. Like, it really got a chuckle, and I mean, it's such a cool idea, like, just to, so how do you proceed from that? Because I mean, that's the story that you're talking about, which is finding people dignified jobs, is really, I think, such an important ingredient which is missing from the whole aid discussion, right? Like, I mean, this is an e-commerce podcast, so I'd love to get into this, but I'm trying not to. But it's probably like one of the biggest criticisms of, you know, the work people do in like continents like Africa, right? Like, you actually decimate the local economy by giving them free stuff, because then you're just making it so much harder for the local entrepreneur to compete. I mean, how do you compete against free? So,
sure.
So I think that's like, that's hopefully more people are going to be inspired by listening to this, and you know, however else they get to know you, to do more work like this in other countries that need it.
Well, I'll tie it back to e-com. Here's how I think that e-commerce is based in 2020, not just on selling a product for the right price that looks good and does what we say it's going to do. I actually think that e-commerce's job in 2020 is to also create content. When you're an e-commerce provider, particularly in sectors like retail, you have a responsibility to creating an experience for your customers as much as you do to sell them a product. And the best stories are the true ones. And so for us, creating an e-commerce experience that people felt like they could rely on, that they could trust, that they want to come back to time and time again, that, you know, that contribute to things like, you know, if we want to make about numbers, contribute to things like lifetime value, or average cart size. You know, we think about these things as a means to help keep the flywheel going of the number of, you know, the thousands now of people who are getting the chance to collect waste every day and earn an income. So, sure. So, you know, we're not bashful about sharing our story, and we just want to make sure that it's true. So all of that work we do in the very bottom of the supply chain, what we call the first mile, has everything to do with the product that we share with our customers every day.
You know, we were talking just earlier about how, you know, digital transformation has changed, you know, because of this situation. I said I wouldn't talk about it, but now I'm going back to it again. But I think what's really come out of that is that it's also, I think, transformed this way of how we do marketing, right? Because pretty much anywhere I look at, people are saying the only way you should be talking to your customers is with authenticity and try to empathize with them. Because if you're going to go to talk to them with a sales first attitude, you're not going to get anywhere. But if you are going to talk to them and try to connect to them with as human beings and say, look, I get you, this is what you want, and this is, you know, this is what I'm about as a business, and this is why you should, you know, spend time with me, that's a far more authentic way of reaching out to people. And it sounds like that's kind of what you're talking about here, right? Like being authentic.
Yeah, it's like, there's a million online, you know, lectures about this, but it's leading with why, right? It's not leading with why, it's leading with why. It's like, it's Apple versus old Microsoft, right? It's, you know, it's the idea of like, people want to participate in being a part of a tribe. You know, they want to be part of something. But even now, like especially now, in the time that we're in, people are increasingly feeling detached from one another. And to give them an opportunity to feel like they're part of something is the entire game. Like, that's it. You know, your product almost becomes secondary. In our case, it's not. We feel really strongly that the product is a really great product. But you're helping, you're selling people not on the idea of a backpack, but you're selling them on what they're able to do with it, who they're able to meet with it, you know, why they are carrying it around, who they're helping because of it. Those elements are the elements we try to communicate online.
And listen, it's such a cool story because you can say, do you know what made this backpack? And do you know how it, I mean, it's a conversation starter as well, right?
That's right. We want it. That's right. We want it. Like, I was actually, you know, say what you want about Tom's Shoes, and you know, they're not a social business. They talk about, they've always talked about being one. The buy one, give one model has been, you know, hit or miss with a lot of people and populations across the world. However, the thing that Blake did, like Mikoski, the founder, did that was different is he helped people take a shoe that was a very simple, straightforward, you know, not necessarily all that attractive piece of footwear. And he gave the wearer a reason to talk about it. When somebody would say, oh, that's an interesting pair of shoes, he invited them, the wearer, to say, oh, you have to hear about this. This company, it takes these shoes, and every time I buy a pair, they give a pair away. Now in 2020, that seems like, okay, we've heard that a million times before.
Right.
In 2011, right, when 2012, that was a revolutionary idea. And I think the thing that he gave to the retail world was an opportunity to invite all of our customers to have something to talk about. And that's what we endeavor to do. Every moment, we hope to give our customers something to talk about.
So I guess then you see yourself as sort of trying to find people who identify with the same values that you do. Like, that's literally, and so then you're giving them a way to sort of connect with you, saying, hey, because people are going to buy the product from you because they also have the same sort of goals, right? I guess they want to feel. And so maybe, like, even before I get into that, talk me through, or rather talk us through, what that journey was like. Because when you went to Haiti and, you know, you saw this problem and you found a way to convert the plastic into this fabric, talk me through how that went to end up being a backpack, because there's really two sides to it, right? Because when you're making a business, you've got supply and demand. So here you found a very good way of finding the underutilized labor to help you build a product, but then you also need to create demand on the other side, right? For it to be a viable business. So talk us through like that step. Like now you've got a fabric. So, you know, what do I do with this? How did that look?
Supply was easy. That was the, supply is easy. You know,
exactly.
That's hard. So, initially it was about selling fabric, and, I don't particularly care for fabric. I don't have a passion for fabric. Fabric is not to me something that I'm like, I've ever gotten really all that excited about. Mm-hmm. So there are people who are obsessed with textiles. I'm not one of them. I'm obsessed with the people that are a part of our supply chain and what the fabric allows them to do. When the product is fabric, then you got to find people who buy fabric. Mm-hmm. And so we targeted the biggest brands in the world, because we figured the larger the brand that signed on, the more material we get sucked up off the ground, the more people we could put back to work, the more bottles we could recycle, the better story we could tell. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and it, you know, that process as a young entrepreneur, I was younger then by far.
You're still pretty young. Come on.
Not yet. I feel like I'm fast approaching old. Getting the chance to start selling fabric really gave us an education in what sells, especially business to business. This is a business to business company who was taking a product that was a little bit more expensive than the other products out there and trying to sell it on the merits of both the story and eventually isolating what about that fabric improved our customer's business.
Mm.
So it forced us to get good at helping brands like Timberland and Reebok and Converse and Ralph Lauren and Puma understand that when they use recycled fabric, it's not about being a good group of people, although it is, right? But they're a business. Their job is not to be a good group of people. Their job is to sell more stuff.
Yes.
So we had to create and understand and really intimately, you know, figure out exactly what improved Puma's business by doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And what we realized was that people aren't willing to pay more for this stuff. But they're willing to come back again and again. Their loyalty improves a little bit. Their stickiness as a customer improves a little bit.
Huh. Okay. Right?
Like their understanding of the brand is deepened in a way that makes them more likely to buy from that brand again. Now, that's a lot harder to quantify.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Like, I mean, how do you even quantify that? I mean, let's get to it a little bit. Like, are we saying that, you know, because clearly you are vying against other suppliers, right? So are you saying there was zero ability for you to be even slightly higher than them in terms of price? Or was there some kind of range where they
And we're getting at why we expanded our offering to direct consumer. Because remember, when you're like, you're offering, I was selling to production people. And production people's job, their number one job, is to save
price down. Exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's all they care about. Like, that's where they get the bonuses from.
That took me a year to figure out that like we were barking up the wrong tree. And like, right. I'm a slow learner. So then we were like, well, maybe we should sell to marketing departments. And so we started selling to marketing departments, and that actually went much better. But like, marketing departments weren't pulling through the product at production. They'd always stop because they get to product. They'd have to go to production and say, hey, we want to buy this. And production would say, we're not buying it.
Right.
So eventually that led to a model that right now I think works really well, which is we actually sell access to the supply chain via a subscription service. So we offer a brand a year-long access to the supply chain. Mm-hmm. We don't charge them more in terms of the price per pound of material.
Mm-hmm.
We charge them a subscription that usually their marketing department or sustainability department pays for. It gives them access to all the data, all the stories within the supply chain and our trademark. Right, so it's almost like a licensing model now, and that works great. However, it's not my margins on it are great now, but it's not a high revenue business, right? Because you're not going to pull millions of dollars out of each of these brands because stuff's recycled. So it necessitated this move to saying like we have to start thinking about retail, and I should have thought about retail when Allbirds came out 3 years ago, because like. Or when Outdoor Voices came out, or when like Warby came out, like that was the time to really think about retail, because advertising online was so damn cheap. right? Facebook was, they were all trying to figure out how to do it right. So they were offering this, you know, this incredibly cheap advertising, which fueled the growth of those brands. What I was saying before is, like, fast forward to right before the virus, and all those brands that prioritize growth over profit, right?
Yeah.
were just falling out by the wayside. Outdoor Voices, like, you know, got to a place where it was costing them more to acquire a customer than they were earning from that customer. Casper was the same way, right? Like, all of these brands started to get heavy under the weight of acquisition. They were really, really dependent on acquisition costs. And so, you know, we looked at that as we were debuting and said, there is a really unique time to be offering to an e-commerce customer, because we're going to prioritize profit, like getting profitable over really fast growth. And we think that's going to be more attractive, both to us as a company, like people who have to run a useful, long-standing company, and eventually to, you know, from a venture perspective, to a sale.
And, you know, again, like it's going back to that, like that, what that change precipitated. It seems like you generally speaking, you kind of had two kind of companies, right? You had that VC backed model where people just throwing money at growth, and then you had this like sustainable growth model, right, where you'd want to reinvest profit back into the business. And everything that's happened so far has really picked the latter as the winner here, right? Because the moment you've got your business fundamentals sound, which is nothing more than having a product which has a price that covers your cost to produce it.
That's right.
So we're really talking here about business 101, right? We could talk all day about having really cool marketing and these really, you know, great Facebook ads and all that, but really that's where it comes down to, right? Like, can you find a product that you can sell at higher than what it takes for you to produce it, and then build your brand around it?
Well, that's exactly right. And that's for me why I am obsessed with the product itself. Like, you know, every single detail of the product we have spent hours and hours on. And you know, I'm really proud when you go to our page, we're a really young company, or this line of business is very young. We debuted in February or late January. And what I'm really proud of is we have a ton of reviews, and they're strangers. And they're all 5 stars. And for me, that, like, this goes back to that idea of, you know, when you have to give people an opportunity and a reason to say something about your brand, right? Like, it's business 101. If I'm expecting to not rely on flashy Facebook advertising and Google AdWords, although, you know, obviously we do those things, I'm principally relying on our customers to talk about us, because they're the most powerful salespeople that we have.
Yeah.
Like, being good at the product itself, making a great product that people want to talk about, that I want people to comment on it and say, wow, that's really good. That's really cool looking. Where did you get that? And then I want the person responding to talk for 5 minutes. I want them to talk about, you know, whatever they want, whatever they come to the brand through. Oh, this is the most useful backpack I've ever had. It's the most versatile. It's made out of recycled materials. It's, you know, way cheaper than like a luxury bag. Like, it has all the, you know, look at these two handles, and this is why they decided to do that. Like, every single element of the backpack we chose, not just because it's useful, but because it has a story. Every single one. And like that for me, I wanted to arm our customers with those stories. And, you know, that's, like you said, it's business 101. How do you get people to pay more than, or, you know, pay for something and make sure that it you know, that earns more money than it costs. And I think ultimately for us, that's the way we chose to do it.
You know, one of the things you mentioned earlier on is what really struck me about how, you know, you started this company with a very social cause behind it, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's fair to say that like, you know, it's kind of what you said there, which is that people aren't really that willing to pay more for that. It's sort of like a side effect of the fact that you still have to build a great product. You still have to make it something people want. And it's sort of like, oh, by the way, it also does these things, which is awesome, right? But that it is fundamentally an oh, by the way kind of thing, right?
That's exactly right.
So I think hopefully it's like people listening to this, when There's so many great ideas coming out right now, especially in terms of building products. I don't think we've ever been in a time where there's been as much products and like solutions to different things. Like, weren't you just telling me before we started recording that there was a company that kept your coffee warm? Like, literally, we have so many products that it's still, you know, anyone looking to start a business, you still need to solve a real problem. You still need to get someone to be willing to pay and like really connect with them. And then if that's able to solve like a more deeper societal issue, that's awesome. But no one's going to pay for that.
That's right. They won't. And anybody who starts a business that believes that is going to fail.
So hopefully we saved some people a lot of time and money. Because I absolutely want more entrepreneurs to really do what you're doing, right? Like, I think it's the future. I think it's like this kind of sort of conscientious capitalism, if you will. I just coined it down there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the reason that we do it, and honestly, like, you know, we talked about, should we be early on, we talk about being a nonprofit, should we be a policy organization, should we advocate on behalf of people? And ultimately what it came down to was like, we just believe that business solves problems the fastest.
Yes.
Like, it solves problems. It's just like, that's what it's designed to do. To solve problems. Like, yes, money is the byproduct of solving problems, right? And like, yes, you make as much money as you can, but that the people who make the most money are the ones who solve the biggest and best problems. And sometimes those problems are like, you know, small parts of our life, like keeping our coffee warm. And other times, you know, they're massive parts of our life that change everything, like carrying around a little electronic box that tells us not only the time, but literally anything else we want to know. Mm-hmm. But like, ultimately, at the end of the day, people are looking for their lives to be a little easier. And I think if you focus on that like all the time with an obsession, I think ultimately, you know, to some degree or another, you're going to be successful.
I think so. I mean, that's quite a bit already to in terms of guidance and like sage advice. But let's talk about your customers. So you went into, you know, you experimented, and I think through a form of experimentation, you realized sort of the market realities in terms of price and like how you could get that. So it seems like a very smart move to go direct to consumer. And so then obviously there you had to build a brand and things like that. So talk us through the process, right? So, you know, how did you define that customer? How did you define like what brand you wanted to go after? Because I think where quite a few people start is like they probably have sort of an idea for a product, or they've got a product which they're really passionate about. But then it's another game entirely, if you will, to actually get it, like to sell it, to make it something that try to understand the customer. And I think a big part of that is understanding your customer well, because you just mentioned it, like you have to solve a problem or like make their lives easier. What did that process look like for you?
I'm a big believer in, there's this guy who is on the founding team of Google X called Tom Chi. And, there's the five guys that started Google X. You know, he was one of them, and he has this, philosophy of rapid prototyping, and essentially it's a philosophy for just business in general. But, you know, the idea is if you were thinking about making your prototype, you know, three prototypes over 12 weeks, his push would be figure out how to make 300, you know, how do you shortcut the learning loop? You know, that process, because that's the only thing that small companies like mine have. We don't have all the money, we don't have all the customers, right? So all we have is the ability is speed, right? That's the only thing that we have. So the ability to increase our speed and get things to market faster is our advantage, our superpower. So we decided we were going to make a backpack because we felt like there was a moment in the market that people were ignoring. And that moment in the market to me is that backpacks are the single fastest growing sector of accessories retail. It's a massive market. Everybody has a backpack. And in the past 10 years, it went from being something that kids wore to something that adults wore. And right. As a generation aged from 18 to 19 to 20 to 25 to 30, they experimented with over-the-shoulder bags. They tried to wear, you know, carry briefcases. But ultimately, they kept coming back to backpacks because they're comfortable.
Right? That's me.
Yeah. That's literally every single time I give an interview, the person, like not at, with ever an exception, every single time somebody said, that's me, like I am that person. And so it's always, you know, really gratifying. But the women and men have two different sets of problems when it comes to backpacks. And we wanted to solve for both of those problems. For men, we call it look like a damned adult. Because many men, as they become 25, 26, rather than spend on a new backpack, they're a little bit late to the game. So they'll carry the backpack they had in college, or they'll carry a lacrosse bag or a hockey bag or a gym bag, and they'll wear it with like a nice sport coat, or like they'll wear it and it they look like a kid, right? The number of pictures I have of the back of guys walking onto airplanes with sport coats and like North Face backpacks, yeah, hundreds, I have hundreds. Every time I see it, I take a picture of it. And for women, it's actually a very different problem with the same result. Women, they tend to buy a nice backpack when they get to that age, except they tend to overspend on it because there's not a lot of options in the market, right? They'll spend $400 or $500. And what happens is they are afraid or nervous to put their gym clothes and their lunch in that really nice Marc Jacobs $100 bag. So what they do is they carry, we call it the two tote problem. They carry a tote bag on one shoulder with their gym clothes and a tote bag on their shoulder with their lunch. And if you start looking around, you're going to start seeing this everywhere. But like those two elements were enough for us to say, why is nobody offering a bag that's half the price of these $300 bags that do all the things that solve all these problems? And like, if you look around, there's not a lot. So we said, this is our space. This is where we're going to go. And once we got that down, we just started talking to people. We made paper prototypes, hundreds of them. You know, we made, you know, pieces, straps, like we made pieces of bags, hundreds of them. And we just tested those out for maybe 5 months. We went to market with a Kickstarter just to test out the market. It went great. We did about $600,000+ over the course of a month. And that was enough for us to say, okay, this is something. That's what led to the brand.
Amazing. But I mean, this is kind of the sort of the lie which you get when you listen to these like business 101 kind of courses, right? Because like hearing you talk about it makes it sound so easy, but I can just imagine it was so hard. Just that even before you talked about that 5 months of prototyping, that insight which you mentioned that like women have this problem, men have this problem. It sounds so obvious when you're saying it, but it was a stroke of inspiration at some point, right? Like it's something which like I don't. It's not like you can ask people to go around and like, hey, go have some five good ideas. It doesn't just happen like that, right?
No, you come by it honestly through a lot of trial and error. Yeah, and I don't know that it is a stroke of inspiration. I actually think you actually just end up there. Right. Like if you seek to solve the problem over and over again, eventually you just get there. And like sometimes you get there fast and sometimes you get there slow. And like honestly, the number one way to figure it out is to talk to customers. Uh-huh. Talk to people. Why do you have this? Like, for what reason? How much did you pay? Do you like it? Do you not like it? What's it solve? Like, we had one woman say, if a guy shows up on a date wearing a backpack from college, there will be no sex. You're like,
that's the motivation for you.
If we solve that problem, we're going to be billionaires.
Oh my God, that is such a great quote. No, but like I think, you know, just from business owners, it's such an important thing to take into account, right? Like that whole idea of perseverance. It's not that it's one of the things I'm always trying to be really careful about when I'm doing these interviews, because like I don't want to make it seem like we're underselling the effort that like, you know, people like you had to go through. It's like, it's you're condensing all of that knowledge which you've had into this, I don't know, 1 hour discussion, but so, you know, if anyone, like for everyone listening, like it's about perseverance, about like that trial and error and essentially hopefully that you've got that North Star, which I think is what you're talking about, right? Like talk to the customer and just make sure that whatever you're doing is like making that person a little bit happier every single day. And eventually you're going to get there, right?
That's right. Yep. And I tell the team all the time, like you put a group of people in a room together and have them solve a problem. If my job as a CEO is to buy them time, that's my currency is time, right? Like nothing else. So like if you put the right group of people in a room and you buy them enough time, they will solve the problem. So like a startup CEO is not about raising a massive round. A startup CEO isn't about finding the best product. A startup CEO is about finding the right people having them solve the problem you're seeking to solve, and then giving them enough months to get it solved. And sometimes that doesn't take a long time, and sometimes it takes a long time. Whatever, however amount of time it's going to take, it's your job to create that time and space for them to do that. And if you do that, and you can get your pride out of the way of being like, you know, the guy or the gal, and letting like your team shine, and then taking, you know, not being afraid to take the punches when things aren't going well, you win. Maybe not with the first business, maybe not with the second, but eventually I think you'll win.
That's again, like very, very good advice. So let's talk about, so now you've got the product, right? And you've clearly had a really good insight. You've been prototyping and you've clearly got something at some point where you feel like, look, I think I can sell this. Like, I guess you got to that point somewhere. And then what does that look like when you're trying to think about how you're going to market this? So you talk about, you know, during your prototyping, I guess you really understood what the customers wanted. So like, walk us through that process of like building that brand and like building that website.
Sure. And forgive me before I answer the question, I do have to hop off at the end of the hour.
Okay. So let's make this quick. So why don't we jump into your website?
Okay.
Let's do a quick share screen.
Yeah, sure. There we go. All right, can you see the site?
Yes.
Excellent. Awesome. So ask the question again, and then I will I can use the screen share to answer it.
So talk us through how you went through you created the product by looking at customer feedback. Now talk us through, like, from that information, how did you translate that into an e-commerce site with the brand and a message and, you know, all of those really important things to make it a functioning site?
Yeah, it's funny. So we spent a lot of time on, like, I talked earlier about audience and about who that, you know, what that person wanted. And then we started working backwards into who is that person? How old are they? What do they do for a living? Where do they go? What podcasts do they listen to? What do they do for exercise? Like, what part of the world do they live in? Who do they vote for? Like literally anything you can think about, we thought about, and we created these personas. There's 7 personas that we go after and we think about. And they all have a variety of different stories, and we've named them, and, you know, like, they are all a particular slice of humanity. So we build the site for them. You know, and that's, and everything from the color choices, to, you know, how the product's merchandised, to what you see. When you come onto our site, you know, the one thing we get a lot of criticism by some of our VCs for is that you don't see the product right away. You see the top of the product. And that was on purpose. You know, we did a negative black on, or white on black as opposed to black on white. That was also on purpose. You see the animation of what you think are feathers, but you can't really tell, coming in and off the screen. You know, what's that about? Why is it there? And what we ultimately ended up doing as we got through all that research of those personas and those people is we developed a pyramid of messaging and brand. And at the very top of that pyramid is are 2 things. The first is our customer. Every single customer that we're going after is what we call game. They're game for it. They're game for getting out into the world and tackling it. And for that person that's game, we want them to feel ready. Those 2 elements are everything you see. So the copy, every day is a mixed bag, right? That's introducing something that says, like, you go through a million different things a day. And we're here to help you feel ready. So every day is a mixed bag. You see the bag itself. Obviously, there's a shop button right there. So the chance to shop the backpack, I'll go back to that in a second. But, like, the reason, like, this site, you know, right when you get off that black, you get to start to bright colors. And it's like, oh, no, we're serious, but we're not that serious, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's an outside of the bag, and the outside of the bag is gray, and the inside of the bag has some color to it, right? Or, you know, just like somebody on the outside, you might be serious when you go to work, but everybody's got a personality. You know, the element of not being able to see the bag still carries through, right? But you do see what you do put into the bag. And the idea for us here was to, like, you know, let's play a little bit. Like, we're not just going after people who are putting their laptops, right? Everybody has stories, and they're all trying to do something. And, you know, they all have different things they put in their bag every day. And finally, you can see the top of the bag. You see a little bit about, you know, why this thing's here. And, you know, you start to see a little bit of copy. The other thing that we wanted to introduce on the homepage was the fact that we have a larger and a smaller. We size our bags, which is different than a lot of, like, backpack companies our size and our price point. So you get to start seeing a little bit more about the product itself. The upshot of this, though, is that if we're, you know, if I'm being really candid, is that, like, a very small percentage of our customers actually scroll. They just don't. Not a lot of people are coming to, like, browse around. Nobody comes and browses around on websites anymore. They go to Instagram for that, right? Which is why our Instagram has lots of pictures of our bag every day, all day long. Like, our Instagram is Hello Day Owls, and, like, that you're going to see all the product shots you want of the bag there. Most people come to this first thing.
And click on the button. Yeah.
That's what I thought. Like, the vast majority. And, like, we're working through right now, you know, how to get them to spend more time on the site. Although, you know, very frankly, like, I don't care if they spend 30 seconds on the site. In fact, I'm not interested in them just, like, hanging out. Like, there's all sorts of places on the internet where hanging out is cool. I want you to buy. Like, my job here is to get you to purchase. So everything that, you know, we want people to see the product quickly. You know, obviously, you see up on the right-hand side, you see the reviews, the sunburst there. Those are the reviews. You see some detail and description. I'll be completely honest. We took the top 10 performing websites on Shopify. We got the top 100 on Shopify. We looked at the top 10 performing sites on Shopify. Mm-hmm. We looked at their PDPs, and we did the same thing.
That's a good idea.
Like there's no magic about it. Yeah, we took our take on it, right? Like, you know, based on the color and smaller, larger, you know, there's an opportunity to go see what the difference is. We have a size guide, and they're all different sizes. Like, that's all great. You know, all good. We made that all.
And it's playful. Going with your theme.
That's right. So the trick for us was, like, make sure that in the first part of this PDP that they got as much information as possible. We hear a lot from people that they need to know. The biggest question we get is, like, does it fit my laptop? So that's why you see in the description why it fits, what laptop it fits. And as you scroll down in the PPP, you start to get more information. Right. And if you want, if you're interested, if you need that information to purchase, then it's here for you. And we do get a fair amount of people that scroll on this, but, you know, we get a lot of the add to cart is obviously the most popular button on this page. And that's why right under it, you see free shipping in the USA, free returns in the USA, like, free repairs for life. Those are three really important things that are, like, almost table stakes now in the world of retail e-com. I would say free repairs for life is one that is not, and, you know, we're proud of that, because we have a lot of end of life plans for our product that we're not talking about just yet, but you know, making sure that free returns and free shipping was there is important.
I mean, the thing that strikes up for me is that, like, as a founder, when you're building your site, you have all these dreams of, like, exactly how you want the visitor to go. Like, when you looked at the homepage, you clearly had a very clear plan of what you wanted the experience to be like. But then the reality is that, like, quite a percentage of your visitors don't care. So you've got this, you've really built these two rules, these two routes, right? Like, one's just like, okay, shop backpack, add to cart. Oh, if you really want to get to know the story, come back and, like, check us out. We're still here for you.
Or look at it, check us out on Instagram, or find us on YouTube, or, like, see an article. Like, you're going to find out about us someplace. And it's not, like, way more people visit our Instagram page than would visit our website.
Right.
Way more people, right? So let's just, like, not be under airs that we're going to all of a sudden change the internet. Like, you know, and I don't necessarily want to, like, force our customers to have a new buying behavior. They're comfortable with their buying behavior. I want to make their buying process as easy as possible. So, like, our add to cart, you know, it's very straightforward and very easy.
Right.
Doesn't take a lot of clicks. You'll see that there's a cord. We have the cord pouch. You might not have ever seen the cord pouch before. At this point, you've seen the bag, but not the cord pouch. But we have it added right here on the cart so that it's easy to get on and off. It's a little easier to get on than off. But, like, you know, very straightforward. You see the color of the bag you buy, the color of the pouch you buy, and you're ready to check out. And if you've got Apple Pay or Google Pay, then it makes it, you know, that much easier. So awesome. Once you get from checkout, now you're in the shop. You're really in Shopify.
Yeah, and then it's just really up to the checkout flow to do the business, right?
Right, and like we do spend immense amounts of time here making sure that this is easy.
Right.
Because, you know, like you get a sense of exactly what the site is doing right and wrong based on where you're dropping people out, right? Like where people are bouncing. And that, so we spend a lot of time helping to figure out exactly where they're bouncing. And we just think through those things every day. We spend a lot of time, you know, really looking at if this button is gray versus green, you know, does that matter? Does it decrease sales? And I'll say, we're doing this on desktop. The vast majority of our browsing happens on desktop.
He's got to be mobile, and then the buying should happen on desktop, right?
That's right. Buying happens on desktop. So we've tried really, really hard to make our mobile buying process extremely easy. And it is at this point, it's really easy. The other thing I'll say, and this is something we're still working on, is the gold standard for load time is 3.1 seconds. It's Amazon, right? Like they have figured out a way to have the best load time in the world. Every 0.1 seconds you are above the average, you lose a percentage of potential e-com revenue for each one of those 0.1 seconds. One percentage.
This is huge.
Yeah, it's massive. That's a massive conversion like change. So if you're loading in 5 seconds, right, like as opposed to 3, you're losing out on 20% of your potential. That can mean millions of dollars. So it's harder for a small company to dive in on that and figure out how to get those load times shorter. But like, you know, this is like the unsexy part of this work is like retail is about streamlining, getting a hook and a story and a product that people want to participate in, and then making it as easy as possible to get them united with it. And it's that simple. And if you can do that with a good story and, you know, making sure they're picking up a bunch of bottles, we've recycled and saved 98 million plastic bottles from the ocean. We put a couple thousand people to work. If you can unite that story and make it true and make it good, you know, you're going to sell some stuff.
Ian, I know we're out of time, and this has been fantastically helpful. Thank you so much.
It's very much my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You're still here, which means you definitely enjoyed that conversation. This is a special COVID-19 e-commerce miniseries to help small business merchants out there get prepared. We're doing a lot more of these, so be the first to know whenever there's a new episode. Just follow DataCue, that's DataCue, on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. Stay safe out there, everybody. Till next time, this is Sharam.